the meaning of Jericho, and when you start looking at Jericho in the scriptures, you find out that for a while, a long time, you don't even know Jericho exists. And then all of a sudden, you start getting close to the promise. You find out Jericho exists, but Eglon takes it over, or whatever his name is. Eglon. That was the first, was a major case where Ehud, when he was a spy, stuck a dagger into the, because he was taking tribute. But Eglon took over Moab, the Moabite took over Jericho. Well, what is that? What is Moab symbol of? Right. So what you've tried to do with Moab? No. Moab tribe. The Moab. When Moab has Jericho, you in the world, you don't even know Jericho exists. You just think that's the way you are. And then Israel gets close, and Moab takes it over, and Moab is the one then that makes the wall thicker.
Oh, it's religious.
Because what Moab does is, he's twice the child of hell. I mean, it's you begin to learn religious behavior, not just behavior of the world.
And it's justified by scriptures.
It's justified by half scriptures.
It's from misinterpreted scriptures.
And so now Moab has it, and then you have to get it by stealth. Israel takes it over by stealth, by secret stuff. How do they do that?
Marching around it.
That's
the more
file.
The more that.
Yeah. First thing that happens is you have to deliver Israel from the hand of Moab. And you have to go into Jericho and sneak up on the son of a bitch. You don't destroy the walls yet, but you sneak up on them. How do you sneak up on them? First of all, you understand that Jericho, when Joshua defeated Jericho and the walls fell down, when it talks about Jericho later on in the 20th chapter or something, when he gives a review, it says that Joshua defeated the seven tribes that inhabit the promise by the act of defeating Jericho. In other words, their doom was sealed when the walls of Jericho fell down. And who are the seven tribes? And what do they mean? I don't want to go into that tonight. If you don't know by now, you'll never know. But there are seven usurpers in the land. Remember this? The first thing that has to happen is you have to get it out of the hand of the formal religion, out of the clutches. And so the first thing that they do is, well, let's read it. Go to Judges chapter 3, verse 12. This didn't happen overnight. I mean, this is long, long, long time is passing here.
Long time passes in here or in here?
In here. And in here.
Judges 12?
Judges 3, verse 12. It's been 40 years now. Well, let's start in 3, verse 1. Now these are the nations which the Lord left to test Israel by them, even as many of Israel as it had not known all the wars of Canaan, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof, namely five lords of the Philistines, and all the Canaanites, and the Sidonites, and the Sidonians, and the Hivites that dwell in Mount Lebanon, from Mount Baal Hermon unto the entering of Hamath. And they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. And the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And those are the seven nations. Six, seven. Anyway, and they took their daughters to be their wives, and they gave their daughters to their sons and served other gods. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and forgot the Lord their God and served Balaam in the groves. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of the Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the children of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. And when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised up a deliverer to the children of Israel, who delivered them, even Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel and went out to war, and the Lord delivered the guy, king of Mesopotamia, into his hands, and his hand prevailed against him. And the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel, son of Kenaz, died. And now we start dealing with Jericho. Are you ready? And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord strengthened Eglon, king of Moab, against Israel because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. Now what happens? How does the Lord strengthen Eglon in your practical experience? You want a principle. You want a rule. You want a how-to.
That's how it's done, or you're going to give us one?
No. That's how it's done. That's how...
By our desire...
Your desire for rules.
Is how Eglon is strengthened.
Right. That's how the Lord strengthens Eglon and gives you the land into the hand of Moab. Understand that?
Any idea what the evil was that Israel did? Is that just the
same as always? Self-seeking.
Oh, that. That old one. Nothing new here.
It's building their own house instead of God's. Being more concerned with cause and effect than it is with the mystery of the kingdom.
Success in life.
And he gathered unto him the children of Ammon and Amalek, and went and smote Israel and possessed the city of palm trees. That's Jericho. Got it? No, he got some allies. Got the old ally Amalek, the old enemy. And who's Ammon?
Amalek's cousin. Okay.
Hmm?
Ammon and Amalek are about the same.
Amalek is descendant of Esau, right?
Yeah, Amalek is
descendant of Lot.
Lot is Ammon is true religion gone bad.
Gone seed.
Gone
seed. Started out good and then
veered off.
Saw the pretty green trees.
Okay, good. So Moab has Ammon and Amalek, and they went and smote Israel and possessed the city of palm trees. So the children of Israel, why does it say that? They smote Israel and possessed it. Why did they bring up the city of palm trees right up there?
Boom. Jericho.
I know it's Jericho, but why did they bring it up? I mean, it's not, we don't even deal with Jericho until here.
Who built it back?
Huh?
Who built it back up?
I mean,
Joshua destroyed it.
No, he didn't destroy the city.
So this is after the walls have been destroyed by him.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go on.
Is that where the Israelites were living or something?
Oh,
Well, that's fine. So the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. How long of
about 18 or 20.
But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, the Lord raised them up a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Gera, a Benjaminite, a man left-handed. And by him the children of Israel sent a present unto Eglon, the king of Moab. But Ehud made him a dagger which had two edges of a cubit length. And he did gird it under his raiment upon his right thigh. And he brought the present unto Eglon, king of Moab. And Eglon was a very fat man.
Very fat.
Very fat. When he had made an end to offer the present, he sent away the people that bear the present. But he, in other words, he had his men carrying them, sent away. But he himself turned again from the queries that were by Gilgal and said, I have a secret errand unto thee, O king, who said, keep silence. And all that stood by him went out from him. In other words, now everybody that was with Ehud left him Eglon left him because Ehud said that he had a secret.
Special.
A word from the Lord.
And Ehud came unto him, and he was sitting in a summer parlor, which he had for himself alone. And Ehud said, I have a message from God unto thee. And he arose out of his seat. And Ehud put forth his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly. And the haft also went in after the blade, and the fat closed upon the blade, so that he could not draw the dagger out of his body, and the dirt came out.
Oops.
If
it was a cubit long.
The blade was a cubit long.
The blade was a cubit long. It's like an aspirin. Eggnog was a very fat man.
The dirt came out.
He was a very fat dirt man.
All over the summer trial.
And Ehud went forth through the porch and shut the doors of the parlor upon him and locked them. And when he was gone out, his servants came. And when they saw that, behold, the doors of the parlor were locked, they said, surely he covereth his feet in his summer chamber. In other words, he's gone to sleep. And they tarried till they were ashamed.
Isn't that when they also go to the bathroom, they cover their feet?
Hmm?
Is that also when they're going to the bathroom?
To cover their feet?
Yeah, they drop their pants down and cover their feet. They close the door.
Yes, with his foot on stuff.
Really? Yeah.
Okay.
The dirt is all over.
Yeah.
They can smell it. They really do. Out here. Can't believe you said
that. Well, that might be true.
Probably it's true. It's all
here.
He emptied himself.
Yeah.
Ooh.
With abandonment.
He drank some magnesium shake.
He's got a lower GI.
Why does that say that?
Lower GI.
And they tarried till they were ashamed, and behold, he opened not the doors of the parlor. Therefore they took a key and opened them. And behold, their Lord was fallen down dead on the earth. And Ehud escaped while they tarried, and passed through the quarries, and escaped unto Searoth. And it came to pass when he was come that he blew a trumpet in the mountain of Ephraim, and the children of Israel went down with him from the mount, and he before them. And he said unto them, follow after me, for the Lord hath delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand. And they went down after him, and took the fords of Jordan toward Moab, and suffered not a man to pass over. And they slew of Moab at the time about 10,000 men, all lusty and all men of valor, and there escaped not a man. So Moab was subdued that day into the hand of Israel. The land had rest 80 years. Now, what does all that mean to us? It seems to me what it means is that you have a right to stop your religious bullshit. Unless you want to keep doing it. Anybody doing any religious stuff? Anybody doing any cause and effect stuff? Anybody doing any Babylonian stuff?
Okay.
Hopefully the body is now debt free. Some of the people in the body take the debt back instantaneously at meal times.
At meal times.
That's tribute for you.
Fortunately, it's just not like it.
You don't have to play that game anymore.
This would be like revenging Moab, or
it's revenging all disobedience once your obedience is fulfilled. Because you don't revenge it.
Kill it.
You revenge it by killing it, but you don't do that. What do?
You talking to me?
Any of you. How many people here feel like they're a victim of fate? Forget all the religious bullshit for a minute.
I felt like it today.
Who else felt like they were a victim of fate today?
What does that mean?
You were, trust me, you were.
Yeah. I felt like this was one of those days.
Okay, that's another
one. But it was just fate.
How many felt like today was one of those days? What does that mean? You understand that you have the right, the authority, and the obligation, if you will, the duty, the privilege, to never again have another one of those days in your entire life.
I didn't even snap to until about 3:30. Not on that wise. I went through the whole day just dragging and listening to that tape all day, actually. With a lot of good stuff in it, but I didn't even get to where I could repent until late afternoon.
How many of you, I mean, don't you get tired of just repeating the same old shit over and over again?
Shouldn't.
You don't have to. Why is this a two-edged sword that he sticks into the fat? Who is it that's growing fat off the tribute?
Besides Gary and I.
Your own religious self.
No. Who's getting fat off the tribute is the Antichrist. And you're paying him tribute daily. You're worshiping him and giving him your tithes and giving him your offerings every day. Isn't that tiresome? That's who Ehud is.
Eglon.
I mean Eglon, excuse me. I knew I made a mistake. Got too many E guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Eglon.
Yes.
Ehud.
One of them had to go.
Why do you continue to pay tribute, especially knowing his stupid? Why do you continue to pay tribute day after day after day after day? Don't you understand that your emotional response to situations is your tribute, is your offering? Understand?
Never thought of that.
But you're giving an offering to the wrong God. You're giving an offering. Not only are you giving an offering to the wrong God, you're giving an offering to the God that you say is your enemy.
I've never conceived of the exchange. That's the first time it's ever made sense to me what the medium of exchange is in that realm. I had no idea what it was.
It's funny, whenever Gary understands something lately...
The watch goes off?
No. No, it's real funny. Before there would be no reason. Whenever Gary understands something in the last few months, he gets this really sick little smile on his face. It's like an, oh, shit.
Smile myself.
Like, would you look at these cards? That's good.
To tell. That's pretty.
I wondered about that a little time.
Of course, I've never said it before.
You haven't. Anybody ever hear it? Your emotional response is
your money. That's your mind. Trust me, you're studying.
I've only been here 6 years.
Can you understand that you don't have to do that anymore?
I didn't until a minute ago. Just because of understanding what money is. That's it.
All right. You understand you don't have to do that anymore? You don't have to have these little sessions.
I really want to believe that's true, but did you know God, that it doesn't seem that way. It just seems to just be automatic. It seems to happen so epic.
Yeah, but the reason it's automatic is because before the offering was made, you gave the land back. There was a transaction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But and what I become aware of is I become aware of it, consciously aware of it, further down the road or something. And then it feels like something out of my control. But it is.
Okay.
But do you see the response is who you're giving it to? Is that?
Yeah, I know that that's what I'm supposed to do, is to rant and rave and rail and curse at people. And
only until you see this.
All that stupid shit.
But do you understand who that is to?
Yeah.
It's an offering to a god.
Yeah.
It's the god called Satan. It doesn't have anything to do with God stuff. It has nothing to do with reality. It has nothing to do with love. It's an emotional response to Satan. It's a habit that has no... He's defeated already. He's defeated... It's a two-edged sword that goes into the fat and dirt comes out. And it says that not for some happenstance reason. The two-edged sword is the word, but it's the word. It doesn't go into the fat until it's understood. And where does it enter? We're going to get into this. Let's another look at the video. Okay. Please hear me. The word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword. Dividing, and it's a sacrificial knife. The only reason that this doesn't have life in you, doesn't have reality in you, is because you refuse to be the sacrifice. Do you understand what it means to present yourself as a living sacrifice? Think about it. I don't believe some of you have ever done it. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present yourself a living sacrifice, which is your reasonable service. It's only when you are at that sacrificial position, when there can be no movement, when you don't faint in your mind, that the two-edged sword can work. Otherwise, you will... that went over there. There it goes over there.
I just realized what I've done. I've presented myself a sacrifice many, many times, but I know now that I never understood what I was doing. So I was doing it, but it was like it was doing it in the land of Moab or something. because it was without understanding. And so I was internally righteous because I had done it. But without understanding, what's the point?
I promise you, if you've done it, there's no righteousness in it.
Yeah. Well, I know I've done it and gotten righteousness for it, so I know that's what I mean.
But it's part of the process. You don't condemn yourself. Just say it, okay, now I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, I just want to understand it.
To present yourself as a living sacrifice says, Father, I'm yours. I never again have the right to my tomorrow. I never again have the right to myself. I never again have the right to be angry at someone. I don't have any rights. To present yourself a living sacrifice means you've given up the right to yourself. This is a huge deal. Therefore, once you've done that, then you can't, this process of Ehud trying to get the sword and egg line has been going on all the time, but this fat man's a good dancer.
Fat men are often light on their feet.
So to speak. Do you understand me?
You know, the thing that came into my mind was like these AIDS medicines and vaccines and things they're trying to figure out. The reason there's so many things in the scriptures, it comes at this from every angle. That's all this is about. It's like every story.
Every story
every
is the same.
Every metaphor, you know, every feast, you know, it's all focusing on this thing. So, because like one story will get something, but you know it may affect one person, but everybody else, you know, can nod in agreement, but it doesn't really penetrate. But when you got two or three, you know,
hundred,
and then you know, like they're talking about, you know, hitting these things with, you know, two or three things, and then, you know, that the probability that you'll not have any left that are immune to it or develop an immunity.
Oh, right? Yeah, right.
So in the Bible, then there's, you know, it's like everywhere you look, you know. Everything crosses over and just wipes out self. There's no place for self to hang on and germinate and get, you know, bigger. If you can hear it, I guess, or if you let it wash over you.
You got to not be concerned about whether or not you've heard it in the past or not. Forget that. Only thing you can be concerned about is that if you've heard it tonight, then it's time to really say it. Father, I present myself to you. Mm-hmm. Understanding what that means. Yeah. A living sacrifice. I've lost the right to myself. Now, the reason it takes different people different times is part of the same process. The length of time it takes defines, you know, your function, who you are in the mystery of God, and your destiny on earth and beyond. But the weapons of this warfare, they're not carnal. They're mighty, is what it says. But you have to, do you understand you don't even get into the war until, number one, you've forgiven everybody external to you. Number two, even if there's no judging of anyone. Number three, you can never be a victim again. All of those other, the forgiving and judging and victim things, all of those are stuff that are in the world or in the wilderness or in Babylon. But once you, in the promise is where the giants are. And you don't even know the giants are there. You just call them personality quirks. Until you've dealt with the debt and forgiveness and all of these other issues that are, they're really kindergarten, they're spiritual issues. They're like the short grass spiritual issues.
I remember us talking about I forget what it was about the offerings, the meal offering or something, about the evenness, you know?
Right.
And that, you know, it's like, that's, I guess, the outcome of this, is this
right.
Evenness of
where you respond to everything
the same,
knowing that, you know, with this.
It's a certainty that is that anchors you beyond any beyond any comprehension of what it means to be anchored. And God has taken us as a people to a point where we cannot go any farther. I mean, you know, I'm like, you know, I want to rush in. And God says, no, you can't go any further until at least the elders are in the same place.
There was a show on last night about some Vietnamese people, and they were worshiping Buddha, and they got real deep into the Buddhist thing, and they started talking about soul debt, and a whole big deal on soul debt, which is the same thing we've just been through, soul debt. But all, their only solution was shedding someone else's blood or coming back again and working it out in another life. You know, it's like a completely different thing than understanding the blood of Christ.
Yeah, but you understand, this is important. If this generation did not have a belief system or a religion that included reincarnation, they would invent one. Man has to have the belief in reincarnation in order to excuse his inhumanity to his brother. So no, well, but he
or he's working out his karma.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, reincarnation is a great religion. It absolves me of any responsibility for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sociologists talk about it as explaining that it helps explain evil, if you can say, but it really is it's excusing your evil.
Right, it's the excusing your self-seeking.
That's why it arose.
So every, I mean, that's just, if you didn't have it, every generation would invent it. There's no great man of religion. Those guys are idiots. Oh, Buddha. Buddha. All Buddha was a fat Shirley MacLaine.
Saying, I think I'm really hearing it for the first time, but I'm not sure. I don't think I'm hearing it right, because I mean, I think what you're saying is stop squirming. And
no, I'm saying that's not what I'm saying.
I don't know if I can do that.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying present yourself a living sacrifice.
But that doesn't mean stop squirming.
Squirming doesn't mean to do with it.
Well, it fits in with what was on that tape about prophecy. You prophesy not to be right, but to be wrong and see yourself so that you know what you're turning from.
Your prophecy is the that's the reason your lips are scarlet. It's the scarlet thread of Jericho. It's only by prophesying and saying what's there is the horror revealed. It's your only hope.
I read a thing about a rabbi listening to one of his students or something, and the student didn't want to become a rabbi because he was afraid he would make a mistake. And he was doing it in a humble way. You know, he was like, I'm not good enough, I wouldn't be able to handle it, or, and the rabbi said, one of the ways to become a rabbi is to think that you can never make a mistake. That's not it, it's the opposite. Got to get out there. But I was thinking about his prophecies and all that stuff too.
You gotta speak what's there. There's never again an excuse to think it over.
Yeah, the key that I got on that tape is we've said that many times, speak what's there, but we didn't know the motivation behind why. We always thought speaking what was there was what made us righteous.
We are good guys, we speak what's there.
Yeah.
Therefore,
I'm just saying what I think.
I'm just prophesying.
This is just me.
Just.
The palette is.
Just.
The
I think part of what's going on in me is, I mean, it has not dawned on me before, this thing about, you know, you present yourself a living sacrifice, you have no rights, you know, you have no right to complain, you know. I mean, I think it's dawning on me that those words mean what those words say. And that's incredibly absolute. And I think for 50 years, I think I've, over 50 years, I've become really addicted to feeling, the emotion, the feeling, you know, the being out of sorts, pissed off, afraid, you know, just the feeling, the emotion. Like being addicted to cigarettes or something.
Yeah, I've never related to that very thing in terms of worshiping Satan as long as I've been here.
I'm addicted to it.
You're addicted to worshiping Satan?
Well, it seems that way.
And that's what you're saying.
There's always, you know, there's always walk along and something, there's always something flares up, some anger or something.
Yeah, but do you understand the ludicrousness? You're saying you're addicted to yourself? You're a victim of yourself?
Yeah, the addiction analogy is always a victim thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's something else. There's this, the addiction is this third thing over here. It's you. But you haven't yet seen that Harry isn't Harry. There's a being that's been masquerading as Harry. Does that present? That's why you have to get it. That's why you have to go to the cross. That's why you have to present yourself a living sacrifice. You don't. The only reason you present yourself a sacrifice is to get dead.
To get dead.
To get dead.
Dead.
So what happens to a sacrifice?
It
dies. I mean, but you got it in your mind, it's Moab. You got it in your mind, if I present myself as a living, it's Moab. If I present myself a living sacrifice, I'm going to be better. There's a lot of Moab in here. Mm-hmm. And so you've been feeding this beast called
Eglon.
Yeah. And he's been getting fat off the tribute. But it's the point is, you present yourself a living sacrifice because you know that this beast is evil beyond redemption. You don't present yourself a living sacrifice to get better or to change.
Oh, yes, we do.
I certainly have.
Well, don't you understand? I mean, that's what the whole meaning of tonight was.
Yeah. Both stories.
That's the meaning. You got. That's how Eglon got, Ehud tricked Eglon. He thought he was going to get something.
Yeah. Get a word from the Lord.
And he opened up and let it in.
And it was a knife in the gut.
Do you understand? That was the point of why we read this. It happened in the city of palms.
Sort of like coming here, right? Not coming here, sort of like moving in here, being here.
Going to breakfast.
Coming to breakfast meetings. Going to lunch.
Sort of like that.
Going to lunch with Ollie.
It's sort of like
Let's
that.
Let's have lunch. Let's do lunch.
Let's talk over lunch.
You guys don't know what happened.
In other words, Ehud is going to be successful.
Huh?
Or he is successful, but it worked out.
Eglon invited Ehud in because he thought it was going to help him.
He had a present.
He wanted to hear a secret. He was flattered. Yeah. Yes. You know.
And he had a word from the Lord.
Oh, I'm going to present myself a living sacrifice.
This is feeling dangerously.
Well, that's why I read it. Do you understand? That's why we're studying this.
It's a relief because now it sounds like I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, die. Dead man doesn't have any rights. It's not a matter of negotiating about it and thinking about it.
Dead people don't have emotions. They don't think. They don't have rights.
Dead people
don't vote.
They don't vote.
They don't wear plaques.
They don't.
line from
just a turning point evening.
That's why we read this, because it was a trick. Do you understand? God tricked him.
So when you said, do you want to go ahead and read this? And we all went, yeah, let's read it.
We were tricked.
Do you think I was just reading a stupid story?
I didn't think about it. I thought I was going to get something.
Don't you think? Solve my problem. This is why people come to Bible study. They think they're going to get something.
Solve the problem.
Oh, it's that other story where they threw a big festival and everybody showed up and killed them all.
Yeah, right. Get inside the church, lock the doors, and kill them.
Well, that's what Diana, when Diana got raped by the, I think they were Midianites. Who were they? Were they Midianites?
Who were talking about?
Diana got raped and the sons of Jacob went and...
Oh, Dinah?
Dinah. That's what I said.
Dinah.
Yeah, I don't know what the okay. hell you're talking
about. Okay. Did you see Joseph?
No, we're going to see it Friday night. Haven't
seen it.
Okay, remember when Dinah got raped and the brothers went and killed everybody? Okay, what tribe did they go kill? I forgot.
The Simeon.
Huh?
Now, which ones were they attacking?
Oh.
The bad guys.
Never mind. I'm not going to ask any questions like that around here. I beseech you, Romans 4:11. Verse 32. For God hath concluded them all in unbelief, that he might have mercy upon all. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Now remember, we just read in Romans 8 that the carnal mind is not subject to the law of God. It cannot be. It's enmity against God. A carnal mind doesn't mean your mind before you being a believer. It's your mind, period. It's the enemy of God. In Colossians it says, you who are sometimes alienated by wicked works in your mind. Don't you understand that all of the thought processes that go on in Jericho, by definition, are trying to be God's counselor? That's period. If God is God and he is resurrected in us, then our only function is to abandon ourselves and to know and see everything comes, everything in the universe in your mind has to come against it is finished. It is perfect. If it can't meet that standard, then you're a fool. I mean, it's... First of all, you're a fool for staying under this preaching. Second of all, you're a fool because you say with your mouth and with your heart that you believe it's finished. You believe that by one offering is perfected forever. But your mind goes and says something else. And your emotions, they always say something else. Don't you see that your mind can only serve the evil one? Your emotions can only serve the evil one. They can't serve anybody else.
That blows me away. It's just like your thoughts, too. It's just like paying your tax, you know.
But it's not. You've been paying 100% tribute. In fact, you've been paying 120%.
I'll have some revelation here.
Yeah. I see it. So have you. You've been paying everything about you plus interest. Yeah.
I've just never seen the money of it.
Okay, now.
Never got the commission.
Oh, the depths of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. You can't get there from here. Right? So why are you worried about it? If you had Here, IQ was 200 above measuring. If you could, if you had a photographic memory and could complete everything perfectly, you couldn't do it. Now listen. Do you understand? Do you understand that when you play in Jericho, when the mind talk and all of this stuff talk starts in Jericho, then you're trying to be God's counselor. You're his God's advisor, his counselor. Does that make sense? Do all of you understand that?
Yeah, you must take a turn.
Now listen. In verse 34, for who hath known the mind of the Lord, or who hath been his counselor? Or who has first given to him? And it shall be recompensed to him again. For of him, and through him, and to him are all things. All power in heaven and earth has been delivered unto him. Therefore, everything is under his feet. Everything is in his control. Everything external to you is in his control. But he cannot, nor will he, fight your efforts. He would violate who he is as if he went to war with your thoughts. He has to allow you to play the fool.
I don't think I've ever seen that scripture in 36 before.
Now, because you continue then, you're always battling something external to you. You've got scheduling problems, or client problems, or money problems. Well, that's all bullshit. They all don't exist. You've got, all these other problems. Sticky tap problems, Oli problems, Barbara problems, Robert problems.
Pal
problems. They don't exist. The only battle is here. The battle here now has to be against Eglon, the one who's been taking the tribute instead of it going to the Father. I beseech you therefore, the therefore is because of what I just read, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy. The sacrifice is holy because you've given it. Doesn't have anything to do with the condition of that which is given. It's holy, and it becomes holy because you've presented yourself the sacrifice, and it's acceptable because of who you contain. It has nothing to do with you. Holy. Acceptable unto God. The only reason it's acceptable is because of what I just said. Which is your reasonable service. In other words, if you remember when we studied this a long time ago, it's the thing that is the highest reason can attain to. There is no higher thing in time and space that reason or logic can attain to other than this one simple statement of present your body the living sacrifice. Because that is the purpose that time and space were created. That's the only way that Ehud will be successful with the dagger in Eglon. Is when you're not a living sacrifice, then every time Ehud makes a thrust or tries to visit, then you'll move. Be not conformed to this world. Remember, the word is the Zeitgeist. There's no value system in this world to be conformed to. Nothing good, nothing evil, nothing. Not whether fish is meat. Nothing. Not an opinion about anything. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transfigured. Remember? Transformed is metamorpho. That's what our only goal in life is to be transfigured. And we who are alive shall be transfigured. We shall rise up to meet him in the air when you see that the evil one is defeated. Lead us not inward into temptation, but to the contrary, deliver us from the evil one. Let him suffer the deadly head wound, let him suffer the deadly wound in that analogy, and it's the wound because it's the wound up here. Let that pomegranate be split in the Song of Solomon, for those of you who were here last night, so that the... And then his seal, his imprimatur, is on the certainty that we will be transformed, transfigured, while we're yet alive. Okay? Now see that that Eglon had to be defeated in the city of the palm. It's the city of the palms because nobody creates an ugly alternative universe. You understand?
I was right with you up until the last sentence.
What?
And then it just became fuzzy and it was behind the clouds and I can't see it.
You mean the city of palms?
No. What you didn't say is be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Your mind is renewed by anchoring every thought to it is finished. Testing every thought against is it finished.
Is that like a response to the thought is that's a lie?
Of course.
I mean,
there is no thought that I can have in my mind about, stuff that has any meaning to me.
Right.
I don't care about it. You don't have to be a debtor to any of it. It's all air.
You don't have any good thoughts?
I have no good thoughts.
If you don't respond that that's a lie, then what would your response be? It's like, this is accurate and that's true.
No, what you respond to, and the reason they're so powerful, is that it makes you feel good.
Yeah, right. I just slide right along with it.
Like it makes you feel good because it triggers triggers an internal emotional response. And always, internal emotional response is always at the expense of somebody else or some other people. And it's always at the elevation of you. Now the problem is that religion now teaches you to do that by imagery. They teach you to image yourself in these grand positions. Please, it's not complicated. There's nothing mysterious about it. It's as simplicity can be.
All you gotta do is rest.
Just rest.
And the weapons of warfare, this warfare, because it seems like these are giants. But the weapons of a warfare are not carnal. They're nothing that we can... But they're mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. what strongholds?
Yeah, the most famous, the only stronghold that's really talked about is Jericho.
That's right. And every high place, it's a stronghold, and every high place that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. And bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. What does that mean? Every thought has to be judged against. Is it finished? That's what the captivity of Christ means. You can't get off on these great new ideas and thoughts. I mean, you're looking at a guy that was an expert at this. I had my life planned out in 5-year plans with options and no-goes and go and no-go on every aspect of it. I had everything figured down to a T. My life was based on imaging and thought. I was pretty good at it. Now I just make fun of it.
In yourself?
What?
You make fun of it in yourself when those things come?
Well, they don't hardly come anymore. I mean, it's just not, it's not anything that's a...
Go back when you started.
It's not an issue. Well, but when I started with it for a while, I thought they were God thoughts. Bringing every thought into the obedience of the captivity of Christ. And don't cast... You, huh?
Doesn't say most thoughts.
Every thought. Yeah. But you like to save some
of them. I'll save the good thoughts. Yeah. That's what we do, is we judge out the bad ones and pick the most righteous and religious ones and let those ones.
But you remember, everything in Jericho had to be destroyed.
Well, it was destroyed when the walls came down, wasn't it?
Well, no, but no, it wasn't destroyed then.
That's what I just discovered. That it was still alive.
Yeah.
Where does the place come where they say don't rebuild it because there's a curse on it? Is that later on? Or?
That's in Joshua.
Well, the walls come down so that then there's vulnerability to all those things.
It's destroyed. I mean, the walls come down and then it's destroyed. Then they go in and burn everything. Remember, that's when the great, that's when the sin of Ai, Achan came in.
Yeah, that was bad.
Because he kept part of the stuff under his tent.
The Babylonish garment, the gold, and the silver. There's a lot of things tied into Jericho. That's a good
point. Everybody understand?
I think so.
And having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience once your obedience is fulfilled. In other words, the obedience is that you have seen it and you've said amen in it. If everybody said it, they say, yeah, I think so.
That's when it's fulfilled?
That's your obedience is fulfilled. Now you have to have a readiness to revenge it. I mean, there's nobody in the world. I don't know any place now there in the world where somebody would tell you not to think any thoughts and bring them into what that means. They think that, you know, bring captivity, thoughts into captivity, the obedience of Christ means think good thoughts.
No, or like Buddhists or people might say, empty your whole brain by your own power of all thought and achieve some kind of...
Yeah, well, they get closer than most people do, but they can't cross over the river.
Well, it's like, of doing that offsets whatever it is that they're...
Right, because they don't know, yeah, anyway. How long shall, remember in Jeremiah the lament is, how long shall these vain thoughts lodge within you? Why do you gad about to change yourself? Change your conditions?
Isaiah, let the wicked forsake his thoughts.
Okay.
Is bringing captive and revenging, is that...
To revenge.
It seems to me that the thought is talking, right? Having a conversation. And revenging and bringing into captivity is responding and saying no. That's what I'm...
No. I mean, it's to see it. You bring it into captivity to the obedience of Christ by saying, that's stupid.
You recognize it for what it is.
I mean, it is that exchange, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it may be for a while.
I think it is for me.
Whatever it is, it's fine. I mean, I can't tell you what it is internally in you, but I know what it was in me. I mean, I just have to... It didn't take me that long to see the stupidity of it.
And now we'll surely be tested on this because we understand it.
You'll probably get a great idea.
Great idea.
I hope not.
Have a good
day. I hope not.
Well, how can a good idea stand against the cross? It can't.
Yeah, no, but they turn me on.
Well, of course. Well, it's child's play. Yeah. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I thought as a child. You become a man when you enter the promise. When I became a man, I put away the childish things. I put away Jericho. It's just little kids playing with blocks. I mean, I don't care if it's Ross Perot or H.L. Hunt or, I mean, they're just, or the president or the emperor of the universe. They're still little kids playing with blocks. It has nothing to do with the mystery of God. Okay? Fret not yourself because of the evil doer who prospereth in his way. How can you possibly be jealous of somebody? Oh, I wish that was like... I can't even imagine myself thinking in that realm anymore. Or I wish I was doing... I mean, it's just so foreign that I can't even think about it. Oh, I wish that was this. Oh, if only I were that. Oh, I wish I had that. Well, that's just as, I mean, that's pretty obviously stupid. But it's just as stupid to say, aha, I've got this grand idea that's going to get me all of this stuff.
Or just that explains things.
Remember, you can't learn anything. When are you going to hear?
Yeah, that's scripture where it said, his ways are past finding out.
Yeah.
You cannot learn anything. You've been here 20 years, you can't learn a damn thing.
Should have learned that by now. But you haven't, so there it is.
The statement proves itself.
Yeah. No, I mean, a perfect example is, how many times you listen to that tape?
Today?
Yeah.
Once.
But you thought you were, but you think you're going to learn something.
Well, let's see. I did have something there that I learned.
Yeah, I remember like crystal.
I think about prophecy. It wasn't, it's not learning, it's seeing.
It's seeing, and then it's unlearning.
Right. When you see, then you unlearn the stupid stuff that you thought was real. But the seeing, the prophecy thing was like, now, yeah, it's not learning. It's kind of hard to describe, but it isn't learning. It's unlearning and then being. Right. And it's the learning stuff that keeps you from being.
Right.
Because that's binding you up, and all your...
By definition, we've been taught all our life that you have to learn in order to be.
Right.
Yeah. I had to have a reason why I had to know a reason why the primetime Texas thing didn't run when it was supposed to run. I was absolutely convinced that it was because that girl was offended by our doctrine. And I said something to you about it. You said, well, that's just ridiculous. And I thought it was gone, but it wasn't gone because I realized when she called that...
They saved it for the...
But I didn't believe that. That's what they said. I didn't
No, that's what they told me.
And you told me, but I didn't believe that.
You thought your thought
was... I thought it was because she was offended by our doctrine. And I mean, I don't know why I had to do that. I had to do that so I would know.
Know what?
I don't know.
What did you have to do?
I had to have a reason
I had to know what was going on, and it had to be like something bad.
What does this connect to?
Yeah, I do that all the time.
But you don't have to do that. If you understand.
I agree.
Okay. Yeah.
But there was feeling. I mean, that generated feeling. It was what a normal person would call negative, but it generated feeling.
Well, you know, remember the line from John's song that, you know, return to the rest, you wayward soul. Don't settle for less. Whatever it is, whatever's the lack.
Now that you've got
the whole.
Well, that's the way.
But you have the authority, according to the scriptures, to command your soul to be at rest. You don't have to play these games. It's just childish. These little kids.
I always get right to that edge, and then my being says, okay, now you got to change the way you do things, the way you live, and what you do, so that this stuff will be...
Well, in your case, that's right.
That's a word for somebody.
Finally, someone agrees with me.
That's a word for somebody.
It's a good fear.
It
just came from my prayer closet. And I have a word for Bye, Kaiser.
I have a word of knowledge.
The word is rhinoceros.
No, it's platypus.
Platypus.
You got it.
It was an us on the end. Some kind of
it was a word.
Really young. It's a platypus.
Everybody want to just put that dagger into Ehud? I mean, it's Eglon. I'm going to get the dagger the wrong guy here.
Yeah, with the dirt flood.
Let the dirt
have two really long headpins
and let the dirt flow. That's a fascinating little.
That is.
And the dirt flowed. All right.
Surely he covered his feet.
Take it, big guy.